friends. It's me, Ellie Krug with Ellie 2.0 Radio. Welcome back. Welcome back. I am thrilled to be talking to you again and hope that this finds you doing well. We have a great show today. The big interview is a reprise. It's a replay of my interview from February of 2023 with Stephanie Gleros, who had originally been on the show several years ago to talk about her founding of Humans of Minneapolis. But more recently, and in February of 23, she and I talked about her working with One Small Step, a StoryCorps initiative aimed at getting people of different political views talking to each other. You're gonna love Stephanie. You will. And as always, in my C block, I'm going to talk about my work as an idealist. So here we go. But here in the A block, okay, let's focus on this week's featured idealist. And as you know, hold on a second, Ellie. As you know, okay, this radio show is a lot of fly by the seat of your pants. And most of the time, and which is the case even today, I'm scrambling to find guests and to figure out who will be this week's featured idealist. Indeed, I really do dream of how good, of how professional I could make this show, this podcast, if I really had the time to devote to it. And maybe that, you know, that's going to happen when I semi-retire, when who knows when that will be. Okay, but as a result of all that scrambling, all right, I'm always doing my best to keep my eyes and ears open for idealists. And this past Sunday, okay, on 60 Minutes, I think it was a 60 Minutes repeat. You know 60 Minutes. That's that 50-year-old gold standard CBS news show. I found this week's featured idealist. I did. His name is Greg Carr. And he turns out to be one incredible idealist. Here's the story on Greg Carr, part of which is from a December 14, 2023 Utah State Magazine piece by Andrea Dehan. So Greg Carr was born in Idaho Falls, Idaho, and was the youngest of seven children in a household where curiosity and imagination were encouraged. He ended up following two older brothers to Utah State, where he pursued a true liberal arts education with an emphasis on history. It was at Utah State that he engaged with various professors, one of whom gave Greg Carr advice that would prove pivotal later in his life. That advice, quote, give your second million away, unquote. It's a wonderful piece of advice. Carr never forgot that. And from Utah State, Carr went on to Harvard University to Harvard's Kennedy School for a master's degree in public policy. I've got to just tell you parenthetically, I identified with Greg Carr going from small town Idaho to Boston to study because I did the same thing. I went from, you know, several years before Carr got to Boston, I had left Cedar Rapids to go to Boston College Law School. And then I stayed in Boston for a number of years practicing law downtown. All right. I had to just tell you that. After Harvard, Greg Carr stuck around in Boston and with another classmate at the ripe age of 27, Greg Carr founded Boston Technology, which if you lived in the Boston area, you knew that that was kind of a big name. I mean, the company took off and this was all in the late 1980s and Boston Technology ended up pioneering a voicemail platform that was marketed to telephone companies like AT&T. A decade later, Boston Technology was purchased by another company, and in the process, Greg Carr became a multi-millionaire. Soon thereafter, I mean, talk about small, you know, boy from small-town Utah goes on and makes it big. Soon thereafter, Greg Carr stopped doing for-profit work and founded the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard University. And let me just tell you, go to that website. Go to the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy. Go to their website, and you will see stories about many idealists working to change the world for the better. It's definitely worth your time taking a look at. Now, it was through that center's work, okay, the Carr Center for Humanity, that Greg Carr met the president of the country of Mozambique. That would be Mozambique in Africa, okay, the continent of Africa. And the president of Mozambique invited Greg Carr to come. Now, at that time, Mozambique was just past a 15-year civil war, which had left much of the country devastated. In particular, that included the 1,500-square-mile Gorongosa, G-O-R-O-N-G-O-S-A, Gorongosa National Park, where many battles during the Civil War were fought, and thousands of animals were killed. Now, I want to give you an idea of the toll that the Civil War took on the annual animal population in Gorongosa National Park. So before the war, Gorongosa National Park had 200 lions, 2,200 elephants, 3,000 zebra, and 14,000 water buffalo. By the time that the Civil War was over, in a section of the park, they only counted 5 elephants and 3 zebras. That was it. And they couldn't find a single water buffalo. Now, Greg Carr described the park as being like Yellowstone National Park, but with all of its wildlife gone and every road and building destroyed. Okay, that gives you an idea of the devastation. Well, our idealist, Greg Carr, decided to do something about that. And over a 20-year period, okay, up to even today, he is still working involved with this. Over a 20-year period, he invested $100 million of his own money to rehabilitate the park, which included rebuilding park infrastructure and reintroducing various species into the park. But, I mean, and if you can, Google the 60 Minutes piece about Greg Carr, okay? I mean, he's actually been on 60 Minutes twice now, I think. So check out both of those stories. But, you know, Greg Carr's work also, I mean, he is a visionary. He believes in philanthropy with a capital P, and he also believes about leveraging. So his work in Gorongosa also extends to many villages around the national park. And it includes running health clinics and schools. There are more than 100 schools that his fingers touch, where his foundation is training teachers and creating preschools. This is elevating the population of Mozambique around the national park. My God. And all of this has paid off. They've planted more than 3 million trees. The animals have come back. And ecotourism is thriving. I mean, quite the accomplishment, wouldn't you say? Now, on top of all of that, back in Idaho Falls, Greg, because he goes back to home base is Idaho Falls, Idaho for him, where he grew up. Greg Carr co-founded the Museum of Idaho, and he co-founded it in a former Carnegie library, where as a kid he used to go and read books. It's just wonderful. And in 2001, Greg Carr did something else incredible. He purchased the compound that had been used by the white supremacist group, the Aryan Nations, after the compound and adjoining land had been seized by court order. You see, the Aryan Nations had been sued by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a terrorist organization. And Southern Poverty Law Center got a huge verdict from them, they put the Aryan Nations out of business. They did. The court seized their land. Greg Carr bought it, and then he donated the land to North Idaho College, where now that land, where hatred had existed, is now a park. Wow. So that, you know, undeniably shows that Greg Carr is an incredible idealist. He is. So just go and Google his name, Greg Carr, and learn more about this wonderful, I mean, we are talking wonderful, wonderful human. Okay? All right, now we're going to go on. You're going to hear a reprise of my interview with Stephanie Glaros from February of last year. She's going to talk about One Small Step. You're going to love and enjoy that interview. And when we come back, you're going to have me, again, Elie Krug, contemporaneously talking about my work as an idealist. We'll be back in a second. You're listening to me, Elie Krug, on Elie 2.0 Radio. If you like what you hear, visit my website at eliekrug.com. Email me at elijkrug@gmail.com. We'll be back in a sec. We're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio on AM 950. Well, now for the big interview. I am absolutely thrilled with a capital T to welcome back to the show Stephanie Glaros, who has been, I think, the most frequent flyer on Ellie 2.0 Radio. You may remember she'd been on the show before because she was the founder and curator of Humans of Minneapolis, which helped humans tell their stories. And she has since then become one of two facilitators for a thing called One Small Step, which is an initiative of StoryCorps, that, you know, the StoryCorps, okay? That StoryCorps that you hear on NPR on when you're the few minutes you're not on this station on Fridays, you know, or whatever day it is of the week, or maybe it's every day of the week, I don't know. But One Small Step is an initiative that they have, which is aimed at getting people who have different perspectives talking to each other. Stephanie Glaros, welcome back to Ellie 2.0 Radio. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me, Ellie. I really appreciate it.
I'm just thrilled to have you back. I think you are the most frequent guest I've had in the 5 years of this show. So I think this is either your third or fourth visit back. So welcome. And so, Steph, tell us what One Small Step is, okay? And share with us how you got involved with it. Because your credentials, of course, are like fit it just perfectly. But go ahead. Tell us about the program.
So, well, first, you know, how I learned about it was really just over a year ago. It was January last year that my husband Corey and I were watching 60 Minutes. And there was a story where they interviewed Dave Isay, who's the founder of StoryCorps, about a new initiative called One Small Step. And what One Small Step does is it pairs strangers with different political beliefs together to have a meaningful conversation in order to see the humanity in each other, you know, especially those who we disagree with. So we're watching this program, and they're showing, you know, examples of these interviews between these conversations between strangers. And I'll never forget it. When the story was over, Corey and I just looked at each other, and he was like, you know, these are your people. Like, this is, you know, this is like your whole deal. And I was just floored because I just thought, it's like everything I believe and the fact that it was, you know, StoryCorps that was behind it, I just thought, boy, this is something that could actually, you know, have some legs and make a difference. So I actually reached out to them right away. I just sent them an email and I just said, hey, I really believe in, you know, this program and what you're doing. And you know, I'm out here, you know, how can I get involved? And they, at the time, basically said, you know, we'll keep an eye on our website and you know, jobs will be posted as they come up. So eventually there was a posting, you know, I just kept an eye out for it. And eventually there was a posting for a facilitator role. So I applied and got the role and started.
As you should have.
Well, thank you. You know, it just seemed right up my alley, and you know, like I say, with StoryCorps behind it, it just felt like, wow, this could be something that could really, you know, cause that sort of ripple effect that you and I have talked about so many times. So that was back in the fall, and then ever since then, I've been facilitating, you know, and convening these meetings between people with significant differences in their political beliefs, as well as oftentimes, you know, significantly different lived experiences, to create a container, let's say, you know, a room, a space where they can connect authentically, get to know each other as people, and not necessarily talk about politics, although oftentimes they do. You know, but the idea is really more about getting to know each other as people, finding out more about each other via storytelling, you know, talking about your own background, how you grew up, you know, what were your early influences, you know, in order to, I would say, give everyday Americans an opportunity to do something concrete to bridge the divides that so many of us are frustrated with.
No, it's, I mean, it's incredibly powerful. I mean, I've gone on and I've looked at some of the videos. You know, at the end of each video, One Small Step has this statement that One Small Step believes it is our patriotic duty to see the humanity in those with whom we disagree politically. What a powerful kind of mission statement, particularly when you throw this patriotic duty thing in, because it really is true. I mean, the fabric of our democracy is at risk right now because we're disagreeing with each other. You know, and I listen to, Tristan and Christy from Oklahoma City. Tristan, a 25-year-old man, and Christy, a 52-year-old woman, who self-described herself as a liberal with a fist. And Tristan, the younger human, said he was a conservative. But both of them, at the end, spoke about how happy they were to be Americans, you know, and that being a liberal doesn't necessarily mean you can't believe in our country, which, of course, is true. I mean, I believe in America. I mean, why do I do all my work? And I know you believe in America. So tell us, this is fascinating. Okay. And so, Steph, how are the people recruited? Okay. And do you have a term for these folks other than just humans? And subjects, that's probably not the right word. Interviewees.
Well, we call them participants.
Participants. Okay. How are they recruited?
Well, it's all volunteers, so anyone can go to takeonesmallstep.org and actually sign up. But we do have, so we have people from all over the country, but we do have three cities that we call our anchor cities. So that's Fresno, California, Wichita, Kansas, and Richmond, Virginia. And so in those communities, StoryCorps is doing more specific outreach sort of on the ground, creating partnerships with local organizations and recruiting participants that way.
Okay.
But it's something that anyone can sign up for. We also have, I believe, six what we call hub radio stations, and one of them being in Grand Marais, Minnesota, where StoryCorps essentially usually works with a local radio station and helps get them set up to do kind of their own version of these kinds of conversations. So, you know, helping them with the technology.
Okay.
and learning how to facilitate conversations in those communities.
And are they calling it One Small Step in Grand Marais, or do they call it something else?
Yep, it's still called One Small Step.
Okay, all right. And so, what has the reaction been? I mean, do you have a lot of people signing up to be participants?
Yes, lots of people signing up to be participants, which I take as a very good sign.
Right.
You know, the people who sign up tend to sign up for similar reasons. So one of the things I do at the beginning of each recording, we call it, because all of the conversations are recorded and then archived both in the StoryCorps online archive as well as in the Library of Congress, which is our long-term preservation partner. I have them ask each other at the beginning, you know, why did you want to participate in One Small Step?
Yep, I saw that they all started that way. Yep.
And so you hear, you know, the same thing over and over, where people are just frustrated. People are, something I hear a lot from people is that they are afraid to speak their views out loud because they're afraid that they might get yelled at. People don't want to get in arguments about this stuff. People are exhausted. You know, many people have lost friendships and, you know, even family members over political disagreements. Yep. And so the people that volunteer are really wanting to do something about it. And like I say, this gives them an opportunity to do what we call, you know, taking one small step toward each other.
Well, and I, you know, I watched the snippet of Deborah and Larry from Fresno, you know, and Larry's an older white guy who's wearing a cap, and Deborah, Asian, younger woman. And I was very impressed because Larry, the older white man, said, you know, he was on there one small step because he sees a lot of problems with people being categorized, okay, which, of course, caused me to say, hey, he's talking about grouping and labeling, what I talk about all the time. But I was impressed because Larry asked, he must have been brave, and I don't know where, you know, you told me off script it's 50-minute interviews and really on the website are just snippets. But at some point he got the guts to ask Deborah, the Asian woman, you know, what challenges have you had? What's it? Have you been discriminated against? I mean, I thought that that was a highly vulnerable question on the part of Larry, but very important question, you know. And Deborah was, you know, she was just very, very honest about the fact that, you know, that she gets discriminated against regularly, you know. And so even in that little 3-minute, you know, clip that's on your website, you see this humanity from humans, you see the vulnerability, you see the honesty. What have you learned from doing this? Because now, how many interviews have you facilitated at this point? You've been doing this for what, 6 months?
Not even. Let's see, October is when I started, and I think I've done, I think I've completed maybe 40, which is, not a whole lot. So I don't have a huge sample yet.
Hold on. Let me just stop you. So as these interviews are going on? Are you off in the background?
The recording itself, I'm mostly on mute.
Okay,
so I'm listening. I'm taking notes. Okay. You know, I might step in once in a while. But for the most part, it's meant to be a conversation between
right.
the two people.
But you're there. I mean, you're monitoring
I'm
what's
there.
Going on. Okay, and
I'll
come to the monitoring in a second. But what have you learned through this process?
Boy, I've learned so much. I've learned that, you know, civil conversations across differences are not only possible, but I think probable when they're sort of engineered correctly. So if you're setting them up a certain way, there's a certain ground rules that you're following, and it's been amazing and really heartening to see how, again, in this with these specific circumstances, that people are willing to listen respectfully, hear opinions that they may vehemently disagree with, but still being willing to listen. I've learned that people's opinions are much more nuanced than I think the media would lead you
right.
to believe.
Right.
Now, you know, the people who volunteer for the program are going to be a certain type of people. They're going to be people who are interested in building bridges. So we don't necessarily get a lot of people who have extreme views on either sides. But, you know, what I'm hearing from people who are, you know, somewhat more in the middle is that people are frustrated with both political parties. People don't feel that their views are totally in line with either party oftentimes. And so it's encouraging to me to see these conversations where people are willing to talk about those gray areas, talk about that nuance, because again, if you just listen to what's you know, the voices in the yeah. media, you start to think that everybody has these extreme views. I don't think they do. I just don't think most of us exist kind of on the edges. It's you know, life and people are so much more complex than that.
Right.
But, you know, I hear people from both sides concerned about the exact same things, bringing up the exact same issues that they're both concerned about, bringing up the same fears for our country.
Yep.
And, you know, finding surprisingly a lot more common ground than you might think.
Well, you've been through my gray area thinking training, And you know one of the things I talk about in that is that 98% of all humans have good empathetic hearts. 2%, challenged, okay? But are you finding that 98%? Are you finding that maybe it's even more than 98% with the people that are your participants? Because I heard compassion on the snippets that I watched, okay? I mean, I was hearing compassion between humans.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting how all it really takes is hearing a little bit about someone's story and a little bit about their background. You know, when you hear how somebody grew up, the family structure they grew up in, you know, what were their, you know, what, where was the geographic location? What was the, you know, what was their faith background? Whatever it is, you don't have to hear even that much of someone's biography to then take the leap to understanding where their political views came from. And so that's what I'm trying to do in these rooms is, you know, help people connect up, you know, talk about their, you know, speak about their own lived experiences, you know, talk about their backgrounds. And then you can kind of start to get in more into, you know, talking about this political stuff, but without the defensiveness, you know,
and the rancor. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, yeah.
And the shaming.
The shaming. And I think, I mean, again, it's just kind of the situation, you know, the formula that StoryCorps has sort of come up with to setting these things up, which they've done with the help of researchers, social scientists, psychologists, you know, it's all very intentional, but it really works. And as long as people are approaching it with, you know, an open mind and with some genuine curiosity, it really works. And it's incredible. I mean, I'm constantly floored
at the
conversations that I'm hearing. I mean, you know, people.
I'm so jealous. I just got to tell you, Steph, I am incredibly jealous of you. Envious would be the right word. OK, because you're doing what I advocate we need to do. So but go ahead. I interrupted you. What were you going to say?
Well, it gives me I mean, you and I are both idealists. You know, so I kind of already went into it with sort of, you know, where I tend to see the good in people, but to kind of hear it and see it play out over and over and over, where I'm listening to people talk about things that I didn't think we could talk about anymore. Mm. You know, just as an example, I had a recording recently where it was a white man from Texas who lives in Georgia, in more of a suburban area, and then a black woman who also lives in Georgia in more of a rural area. And they were talking about their experiences of the pandemic, which were very, very different. And they were able to then, from there, talk about their decision to be vaccinated or not. So he had chosen to be vaccinated and she had chosen not to. Huh. And to listen to the two of them have that exchange and have that conversation with zero animosity, with, you know, no blaming, no, you know, and just listening respectfully and understanding, going like, I can understand why you made that choice. Is just incredible to me.
You know, I could talk with you now, I mean, all day, but unfortunately we're getting towards the end of the interview. Will you give the audience again how they can find out about One Small Step? Where would they go?
They would go to takeonesmallstep.org.
Okay. Now, Steph, you know I'm going to ask you, so what made you an idealist? And how is this? I mean, I think I already know the part of the second answer here, which is how has this fueled it? But how'd you get to be an idealist?
I think it's in my blood. It's really in my background. I mean, both of my parents, both sides of my family are sort of glass half full people, you know, and so I just sort of grew up in that type of an environment. But then I think it's really been just fortified and strengthened by my experiences as an adult, where I just I believe in people. I believe in our ability as individuals to learn and grow and evolve, as long as we're willing to. You know, there's anything's possible. And I think, you know, when we put our minds and our hearts and our hands together, I believe as Americans, there's really nothing we can't do. But it really, I think, starts with the individual, again, taking these steps in order to sort of, you know, just heal these divisions. And I think we can do it. And a lot of people probably disagree with me. And again, that's okay. I'm fine with that. But you know, One Small Step program, all it's doing is reinforcing that belief in me.
Well, it's just a phenomenal program from what I've seen. I will do my best to make sure that we share about it. This interview, a link to it will be in my newsletter that's going to come out this month for sure. But Steph, I just want to say something to you, okay? I've known you now probably for close to a decade, and I just want to tell you how proud I am of you. I know that you've had some challenges. I know that, you know, sometimes your idealism has been dashed, but you never gave up, okay? And I just want you to know I am incredibly proud of you.
Well, thank you, Ellie, and I'm also incredibly proud of you. You know, you've done so much to you know, again, to be a bridge builder, to be out there, to put yourself out there in a way that I find incredibly courageous, and you know, I know you're making a huge difference in the world, and so I appreciate all the work you do, and appreciate you as a person.
Thanks. Okay, well, Steph, I may have you back on in a year, okay, to hear more about what you're listening to, what you're hearing. And if the next time you come back, I'm going to want to talk about the ripples, okay? So, because the program is relatively just getting going, but I'm sure that there are ripples, and there'll be more ripples that'll come through, okay? So we'll have
Absolutely.
You back. We'll have you back. We'll continue with you as being the most highest frequent flyer on LA2 Radio. Okay, all right. Well, listeners, it's just been great to talk to Stephanie Glaros yet again from Take One Small Step through StoryCorps. And Steph, keep up the good work, okay? And just keep helping people to be human and reinforce our belief in the common goodness of all humans, okay?
Will do.
Thanks. All right, listeners. When we come back from our break, I'll talk about my work as an idealist, okay? All right, you're listening to me, Ellie Krug, on LA 2.0 Radio on AM 950. We'll be back in a second. Thanks. And we're back. LA 2.0 Radio, I hope you liked that interview with Stephanie. Stephanie is also a personal friend, and I think I said that in the interview, and I just saw her the other day. She was on a Zoom with me talking about helping to foster courageous conversations across Minnesota. So there you go. All right, my C block, where I get to talk about Ellie Krug's work as an idealist. So, first off, you've been hearing me for several weeks talking about the public gray area thinking that was scheduled for March 14th in Chaska, Minnesota. And it happened. It did. I am got to tell you, you know, I put the event together, used Eventbrite to sell tickets at $10 a pop, only to get back recoup the price for renting the space at the Chaska Event Center. It is gorgeous space. It is not cheap space for 4 hours. And so, plus when you have people, you know, when even just 10 bucks means that people will come. Okay. And we had nearly 60, I think the count was 58 people on a Thursday night in Chaska from 6:30 to 8:30 doing gray area thinking.
And let me just tell you, I mean, all of, you know, these people, for the most part, I mean, some people came in small groups, but they're, for the most part, they were all strangers to each other. And let me just tell you, gosh, it was a great group of folks. I mean, they were willing to engage. I got them to laugh. I mean, anytime I can get anybody to laugh, that's a really good thing. You know, there were some poignant moments. I think there was some vulnerability. There was some sharing, and I think there was some learning. And it was just, I mean, it was invigorating. It was a lot of work. Okay, I tried to get some help to pull it off, to get things put together, but I ended up doing it all by myself, although a good friend helped me at the end to clean up. But I'm just here to tell you, it was great. And, you know, now, Chaska, Minnesota, okay, yeah, a little blue collar, a little blue speck in an otherwise red county. But, I mean, we had people come from across the county and from outside Carver County. And it was, you know, it was proof to me yet again, okay, that people are hungry. They want to find ways to be good to each other. So, I and of course, I'd love to do more of these. And I'm going to have to, you know, start reaching out, Ellie, you know, just start reaching out to organizations to see if they would help partner with me doing Gray Area Thinkings all out and farther. I want to go farther west in greater Minnesota to do this work. So stay tuned. We'll see. You know, Ellie Krug, the hopeless idealist. Trust me. And if you're hearing a little fatigue in my voice, there's a reason for that, because the last two nights I've gotten back, you know, at, you know, 10 o'clock, because the night before that, I went and spoke to some medical professionals. I have a Talk Trends 101, of course, but I have one that's a twist for medical professionals. So I talk about certain things related to that. I talked to a group of about 23 people that, as they ate dinner and had drinks in a back room in a bar. These were high-level medical professionals, and let me tell you, these people were wonderful. They were great people, you know? I mean, everyone, you've got to understand how incredibly lucky I am to be able to do the work that I'm doing. I mean, they're just, you know, I've talked to you, and I've complained about how the work is drying up and how, you know, how people are getting afraid. But boy, when I'm invited in, people are enjoying it. Not that I'm anybody great. I think that all I'm doing is just tapping into a human need to feel, you know, because people want to do good. They want to exercise their good empathetic heart. You're hearing me tap my heart right now. So there you go. So I did two talks this week. Woohoo! I also got my face, my picture on the front page of the Chaska Herald this week, because on Monday night, okay, so I've already told you about two nights this week. On Monday night, I was at the Chaska City Council meeting with a number of other people talking about an initiative called Communities of Belonging. This is an initiative put out by the Public Health Department around mental health, around belonging, okay, which natural fit for Ellie Krug. And so I've gotten with this group in Chaska to help launch this thing called Our Chaska, about making Chaska not only a welcoming community for everyone, but thriving, where everybody could thrive. And we presented to the Chaska City Council on Monday night to tell them about what the initiative is. There was a short paper, about three pages, that laid out the vision for Our Chaska. Yours truly had authored that paper, just so you know, that it's a draft. But we talked and invited the city council, which I think they're going to take us up on, is to have a council member involved with our group as we go forward. The whole idea is to get the community reinvigorated around the 2020s and the values of diversity and things. And believe it or not, Chaska is 13% diverse. Okay. And actually, I think it's higher than that, but that's the figure they were citing. So I did that on Monday. I mean, it has been a week of Ellie Krug, the idealist, like really being out there. And there was a reporter there on Monday night at City Hall. And guess who gets their picture on the front page, along with Bob Repke, the former mayor of Chaska, who's also part of the group. And if you are a longtime listener of Ellie 2.0 Radio, you know I had Bob Repke on the show about 3 months ago. My God, Bob is just, I mean, what, talk about, you know, a legend as it relates to trying to foster change and a idealist. So there you go. We did all of that. And then, on top of that, this week on Monday also, this is why I'm so tired, I got to go volunteer at the Victoria Elementary School close to my house and serve lunch to the children. So I went there with, you may recall that I'm on the school board for Eastern Carver County Schools. I went to the elementary school with our superintendent, our acting superintendent, Aaron Rathke. We toured a couple of classrooms, a kindergarten classroom and then a fourth grade classroom. Let me just tell you, I mean, we walked in as the teacher doing their magic. That is the word, magic, okay? Because, and I just, every time I go into a classroom, every time I see our teachers, our educators at work, and I see our students, our learners, that's the technical phrase these days, our learners at work, oh, it just so warms my heart. So part of this for like almost 2 hours was me helping the lunchroom folks serve lunch. And Monday afternoon, Monday lunch was chicken tenders. I am not only handing out the chicken tenders in my with my hand with plastic gloves, okay? I'm pulling them out of, you know, where they're storing them, keeping them warm. I'm pulling cold stuff out of cold storage. I'm putting, you know, carrots into little cups. I mean, I'm like, you know, the lunch lady, okay? And as kids were coming up and getting their chicken tenders, I was like saying, hi, how are you? How's your day going? You know, nice to see you. And I, you know, and the eyes of these children just growing big as they were seeing this stranger, but particularly the stranger who looks like a chick but sounds like a dude. And I'm happy to report, or maybe sad, I don't know, that only one of these young kids asked me if I was a boy or a girl. And I said, no, I said, I'm a girl. I said, but don't smoke cigarettes. And the woman who was working next to me just started cracking up when I said that. So, you know, I mean, sometimes being an idealist, well, a lot of times being an idealist, it gets to be fun, but you don't usually, idealists don't get to usually serve lunch, you know, to elementary school kids. And I just got to tell you, it was a blast. So I've had quite the week as your featured idealist here, your own personal idealist, Ellie Krug, going out trying to make the world better, trying to change it. That's really what I'm trying to do. So, all right, I hope that you have enjoyed this show. And next week, I've got a guest lined up, so hopefully we got that. And I got some other things in the hopper. We'll see how all of that goes. And just, you know, if you want to, you know, keep track of me, go to elliekrug.com. You can go to events. You'll see where other things going. I'm speaking at Arden Hills at the Unitarian Church in Arden Hills on Sunday the 24th. All right. I need to say thanks to my producer, Brett Johnson. Brett, thank you for everything. You do a great job always. To you, my audience, listen, you know, between now and when you hear my voice next, do me a favor, go out and do something to make the world better. Okay? You can do that. All right? Okay. Ellie Krug, Ellie 2.0 Radio, over and out. Bye-bye.